Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu delivered a much-anticipated speech before Congress today, warning that the deal in the works between the U.S. and Iran to remove economic sanctions against Iran in exchange for curbs on the country's nuclear program would leave the Middle East, in his words, littered with nuclear bombs.
If anyone thinks this deal kicks the can down the road, think again. When we get down that road, we'll face a much more dangerous Iran, a Middle East littered with nuclear bombs, and a countdown to a potential nuclear nightmare.
Prime Minister Netanyahu is facing a tough re-election battle this month, but he said his visit to the U.S. was not political. It was to warn the U.S. against the planned 10-year deal being hammered out right now in Geneva. In a moment, Karim Sajapour with a view from Iran. But Jim Walsh is here now, security analyst with the Security Studies Program at MIT. He's in the studio with us. Jim, your thoughts. Netanyahu characterized this ongoing deal, as he said, it's not new. You could Google it and find out about it, saying it would leave too many centrifuges spinning, ready to make bombs in Iran, and it would only be overseen by inspectors who could be kicked out as they were in North Korea, which did get the bomb. Your thoughts first on his characterization.
Well, I think we should have a note of caution here. It's a little bit of deja vu all over again. A year ago, we were on the verge of announcing this interim deal. Before the interim deal was announced, he came out and condemned it, said it was like giving in to Hitler, meetings in Munich. And then now, you know, the sky was going to fall in, and none of that happened. And so we're getting the same speech, essentially Iran is Nazi Germany. And so I think we need to be cautious about some of his characterizations. So, for example, on the particulars of the deal, what we've seen is this speech represents both changing the goalposts and the size of the field. He gave that speech before the UN a couple of years back where he said, you know, Iran was weeks from the bomb. We need months. We need a breakout time of months. So now we have a deal that's going to have a breakout time of at least a year. And he said, well, now a year's not enough.
But he challenged that, too. He also said that it could be shorter than a year. And he called for essentially a better deal with more restrictions. He would disagree with your characterization, as you know, Jim. He would say that maybe the sky didn't fall, but Iran has been, as he said, gobbling up countries in the Middle East. We're going to talk more about that in a moment. But he was wrong
about the nuclear deal is what I'm saying,
yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
He came out and said the nuclear deal that they've been abiding by, that the IAEA has said that they've been faithfully abiding by for more than a year, he said that was going to be a disaster. That turned out not to be
not
true.
Not to be. Well, let's listen to his call, though, for a better deal.
This deal has two major concessions. One, leaving Iran with a vast nuclear program. And two, lifting the restrictions on that program in about a decade. That's why this deal is so bad. It doesn't block Iran's path to the bomb. It paves Iran's path to the bomb. So why would anyone make this deal? Because they hope that Iran will change for the better in the coming years? Or they believe that the alternative to this deal is worse? Well, I disagree. I don't believe that Iran's radical regime will change for the better after this deal.
So that, again, is Netanyahu criticizing the deal that already exists. But in calling for a better deal, he said it should demand of Iran that it stops aggression against its neighbors, that it should stop supporting terrorism and stop threatening to annihilate my country, Israel.
Yeah. And so essentially what he wants to do is take a nuclear deal and make it a nuclear terrorism regional foreign policy intervention deal. Well, that's not possible. Listen, we've negotiated nuclear deals with Gaddafi in Libya, with the old Soviet Union that was a nasty, nasty regime. We didn't require that they turn into Sweden before we have a deal. And once you start adding things onto a deal, all these other issues, then a deal becomes impossible. You know, he said in that there is an alternative, but the only alternative I heard him say was we need to negotiate a better deal. What, you know, what does that mean? I mean, the first half of the speech, he says they're Nazis, jihadi, terror conquerors.
And competing with ISIS for control of the world.
Right. And your answer to that is negotiate a better deal. I mean, that's a mismatch.
What does this do, meantime, in the seconds we have here, for U.S.-Israeli relations?
Well, I think they're under strain here. I think there's been a rip in the fabric because of the partisan nature of how this has unfolded. But the U.S. and Israel have had difficulties in the past. Virtually every U.S. president has had a problem, you know, problems with Israeli prime ministers. I think we will get by this, but I think there are many in the U.S. and Israel that worry about the state of relations and worry that Israel's going to isolate itself.
Yeah. Jim Walsh here now, security analyst with the Security Studies program at MIT. We should say that that is a concern, but he certainly got a lot of support in Congress today.
Yes, lots of applause.
Yeah. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you.
Well, let's bring in Karim Sajjadpour. He's a senior associate with the Middle East program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. And Karim, what's your reaction to the speech?
Well, I think it's going to be very difficult now to come up with a nuclear deal which gets the blessing of both Prime Minister Netanyahu and Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. The two of them have kind of mutually exclusive goals, and we saw today in Congress there was tremendous kind of support for Netanyahu's speech. I think it's going to really make life – it's going to make it that much more difficult for President Obama and Secretary Kerry to sell this deal within the U.S.
Would it ever have been possible, though, to get both Netanyahu and Iranians on the same page on a deal?
Perhaps not Netanyahu and Iranians, but I think that it's going to be much more difficult if Congress passes legislation which forces the president to give Congress oversight over any deal that's been signed. And I think today Netanyahu made that a stronger likelihood. And, you know, frankly, what Netanyahu said about the nature of the Iranian regime, its support for radicalism in the region, a lot of that, I think, rang true with members. The big issue is that he didn't really propose any better alternative at the end, as Jim Walsh said.
Well, how do you think that the speech will be received inside of Iran? Were they watching this closely, or do they care what was said before Congress today?
Well, I think for the Iranian people, it's deeply disappointing because this is a very young country. A vast majority of the country was born after the revolution. It's a post-ideological, post-revolutionary society that aspires to be part of the outside world, aspires to be economically and politically integrated. So I think for people, it's very disappointing. I think for the hardliners in Tehran, this speech was a godsend because Iran's hardliners have long thrived in isolation and political, you know, greater continued political and economic isolation for Iran's hardliners is more a carrot than a stick. That's how they do best. And I think that they were, you know, many of these hardliners have been quite concerned about the prospects for a nuclear deal and, you know, potentially greater detente between the United States and Iran and the prospects that could dilute their hold on power. So I think that what Netanyahu did today was, I'm sure, quietly applauded in hardline quarters in Tehran.
Jim, you're nodding your head at that.
Yeah, I agree. I think Karim Sajjadpour is absolutely right. Listen, there are opponents in both camps in Iran and hardliners in the United States who want this deal to die and are working assiduously to kill it. And because if this deal goes south, doesn't work out, then the moderate leadership of Rouhani, they're toast. And that means an opening for the hardliners to come back.
Well, and Karim, let me just go back to you, because what happens if there is no deal?
Well, I think there's a dissonance amongst members of Congress because on one hand, they understand that their constituents, the American public, is not interested in yet another military adventure in the Middle East after a decade in Iraq and Afghanistan. Yet if there is no deal and we pass sanctions and Iran again puts their foot on the gas and they reconstitute their program, then escalation and conflict becomes much more likely. So, you know, I think that if there is no deal, best case scenario is what I've termed in the past managed irresolution. You know, there's not a comprehensive resolution, but both sides kind of recognize that it's in neither of their interests to escalate and we kind of stay where we are. But I think that's going to be increasingly difficult to to freeze where we are for an indefinite period of time.
Jim Walsh, I just want to step in. Your characterization of Rouhani as a moderate, others agree with you, but you know Netanyahu today did not.
Yes, and he's at odds with his own intelligence reports. I mean, at several points in the speech, he made claims that soon Iran would be armed with nuclear bombs, that Zarif and Rouhani are not really moderates. That's not what the Mossad says. And so, you know, the U.S. and Israeli intelligence are in agreement on this, and he is taking positions outside his own intelligence
community.
Okay, Jim Walsh, here now, security analyst, and Karim Sajjadpour with the Middle East program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Here and Now.